All right, as we try to do on this program, and as I've tried to do for 22 years, I try to bring you different topics each night, topics that are unusual, some known, some completely unknown. But the idea is to present a view or an impression of something that you won't ordinarily get anywhere else or hear about very often, at least. I've got an author this hour that I haven't met except on the internet, in email, for whom I have enormous respect and esteem. He is a man who has done something that has needed to be done ever since the end of World War II, which didn't end in 1945 April. It didn't end in 1946. He covers it through 1947, but it really went on up until 1953. Between 5 and 8 million German human beings were killed. They were liquidated between 1945 and 1953, by many accounts. You see, the end of the war didn't mean the end of death and murder and the destruction of what was called Nazi Germany. I don't call it Nazi Germany, I call it Germany. These were human beings. Very few Germans were actually members of the party to begin with. This is a book that covers 1947 and backwards to 1944 during the war. I'll read the back cover. It was the most deadly and destructive war in human history. Millions upon millions upon millions were killed. Hundreds of billions, perhaps $1 trillion in property damage, ultimately accumulated. Ancient cultures were reduced to rubble. World War II was truly man's greatest cataclysm. Thousands of books and movies and documentary films have been devoted to the war, but there has never been such a terrible retelling of the story as one you will find in Hellstorm. In this chilling You Are There style, the author places you, the reader, at the scene, in the moment. Throughout this book, readers will see what Allied airmen, American, British primarily, saw as they rained down death on German cities, where the reader will experience what those below experienced as they sat trembling in their bomb shelters awaiting that very same death from above. The reader will view up close the horrors of the Eastern Front during the last month of fighting and through the mud, blood, and madness of combat. They may come to understand how the same German soldiers who only moments before had destroyed an enemy tank could now risk their own lives to rescue the trapped Soviet crew inside the tank. Yes, the Germans had valor. They had honor. They were different. Readers will witness for themselves the fate of German women as the rampaging Bolshevik lunatic, insane Red Army raped and murdered its way across Europe. All females from 8 to 80 feared the dreaded words, Frau, komm. The worst nautical disasters in history, which claimed countless thousands of lives, the greatest mass migration known to man in which millions perished, the fate of those wretched victims in post-war death camps and tortured chambers. Post-war death camps and torture chambers run by the Americans and the British and the French. These and many other dark secrets of World War II now come to light in Hellstorm. And I want to say one more thing. Dwight David Eisenhower is one of the greatest war criminals in history, as is Winston Churchill, Bomber Harris, and I could go right down the list. You don't hear about that. You'll never hear about that in the curricula of the school system in this country because it is corrupted and rewritten and is full of lies. Dwight Eisenhower presided over the deaths of over 1 million German men and some women in outdoor open barbed wire enclosures He put them there and let them die. Many were young boys, 16, 17, 15. Many were older men, 50, 60, who had risen, joined, and tried to fight off the encroaching Bolshevik Red Hordes because they knew what was coming. They knew what would happen to Europe. They knew. And they did their damnedest to stop it. Eisenhower was a mass killer, a mass murderer. You can read about this in a book called Other Losses, written by James Bach, B-A-C-Q-U-E, a Canadian writer. There are others. But now in the book Hellstorm, Thomas Goodrich has captured all of it. And it is a story that deserves to be told in every classroom, in every church, in every assemblage in this country, to wake Americans up to the fact that we were not the good guys in World War II. We didn't save the world for democracy. We were just as evil as anyone else, if not more so. And with that, I'll shut up. And welcome Thomas Goodrich. Thomas, thank you verbally in person for doing this. It's something that needed to be done. You're the first man to do this that I know of. And it is a story that literally, hopefully, will never be duplicated in human history, although I wouldn't put much past people these days. Thank you for being here, Thomas.
Well, thank you for having me, Jeff. I really do appreciate you taking the time out to talk about this. And I also want to comment on that spellbinding, dramatic intro you so eloquently delivered. That is just about as good as it gets. In fact, I'm not so sure I should even be talking right now. I think I'd rather hear you talk. And by the way, Jeff, I've got to say, I've been an admirer of yours for a long time. You're so eloquent, and it doesn't hurt. You've got some hair. I wish I had that head of hair. I tell you what, I think that. But yeah. Anyway.
It's real, whatever yeah. It is.
That's magnificent. But yes, I wish I could say it's my pleasure to have written this book. Of course, I cannot. It was my horror to have written this book. As you probably know, in fact, I know you do know, when you write a book, an author writes a book, it's not one pass through and you're through and that's it. You go back and read it yourself and enjoy it. It's not that way at all. You go through it and you go through it. You research it, number one, if it's a history book, and that pretty well familiarizes you with everything in that book. But then you have to write the thing out, then write it some more and pound it some more until you finally become a part of that book. You actually live and breathe and become, in essence, a piece of that book. So it's inescapable. This, of course, by far was the worst book I have ever researched, the worst book I've ever written. But as you said so eloquently, it had to be done. Who in the hell is out there doing this? It certainly isn't the academic historians. These people, I understand why they don't stick their neck out, because they need a job. They need
to pay
the
bills. Doesn't make them any less cowardly, in my view.
I know. And we're at a point right now in our history, at least the American history, in the West, history of the West, that those days of basically sticking your head in the shell like a turtle are over. You're going to have to decide whether you're going to fish or cut bait. We're getting very close to D-Day, zero hour. And I think it's time for everybody to stand up in one form or another, whether it's giving generously to your favorite cause, whether it be Jeff Rentz, his program, wonderful, or whether it's basically writing something or whatever you can do. But it's time for every man, woman, and jack of us to stand and be counted.
And what unfortunately is being taught and inculcated into the subconscious of many people through the vicious, unbelievably sophisticated media is to withdraw, to enjoy the moment, to push all responsibility off and away on others, and to do the opposite of that which you just spoke. And that's the society we're dealing with. And this is the plan. This is the plan to emasculate, spay, and neuter the will and the decency of humankind, and to turn them into drooling, zombie-consuming morons. And they are being largely very successful at that.
Well, let's face it, reality TV, sports, the baseball playoffs, that's a lot easier than thinking.
And exactly. It's relieving us of the responsibility of thinking. No more proactivity, reactivity, reaction.
But we're swiftly approaching that day, Jeff, where that's not going to be good enough. You're going to have to stand and be counted. You're going to have to pull away from your sports, your addictions, your mindless entertainment, and or else it's all over.
Or snap on the leg irons and get in line.
That's it exactly, yes.
Now, this book, and I am friends with Harry Cooper, who runs the organization SharkHunters.com, who honors soldiers from all flags, of course, but does specialize on the U-boat Waffe of World War II. And I've gotten to know a lot about that. And Harry wrote the book, which proves beyond any doubt that Adolf Hitler and Eva Braun did go to Argentina, along with tens of thousands of other high-level Germans, many of whom were flown there in American long-range DC-4s by American pilots. We know that now. We know where Hitler went. We know when he died. Eva Braun may still be alive. We're not sure. The reports are varying, but she could be a little over 100 now, and she still might be here. I don't know. But let me say this about Germany. In my opinion, and I don't know if you'll agree or disagree, up until the start of World War II, the cards were stacked against Germany. Ever since the Treaty of Versailles, of course, that horror. Germany was, without question, up until that point, the greatest country in the world in terms of culture, science, literature, any phase of humanity the German culture absolutely excelled in. And that created not only envy and jealousy, but great enmity. Is that a fair statement?
I wouldn't dispute a word you said there. I think it's pretty apparent that this was the preeminent nation, not only in Europe, but in the Western world. And of course, that means in the rest of the world. Yes, these people, given another 20 years of freedom, that's incredible to think about what they would have done. We would have not only been on the moon by 1955, we would probably be on Mars right now.
Agreed.
But again, this was a nation that dared stick its head up and say, we're going to be a free people, a free folk, and you're going to have to either learn to live with that or we're going to go to war. And of course, we know what world Jewry did. They went to war starting in 1933 with the economic boycott.
Yeah.
And then it spiraled out of control from that point on. Yes, I guess if the book doesn't do anything else for anyone, perhaps it gives them a blueprint of what's to happen in the future if anybody else dares raise their head up. For instance, China. I'm looking at China right now as perhaps a growing candidate for the treatment of Germany in the 30s and 40s. But
and look in the micro at Iraq and Saddam Hussein and Libya, Muammar Gaddafi stood up and said, we're not going to sign on any longer to the Rothschild central banking system. We're going to do our own thing for our own people. Both hideously murdered, their countries just reduced to trash. That's the same thing, but in a smaller venue. And you're right. We'll see what China does. The Chinese have a 6,000-year-old culture. They're very shrewd. They know time works to their advantage. We'll see what happens, but good point.
Interesting. I'll add this as a side note. I have a very good friend who is Chinese, a PhD as a matter of fact, and he teaches at a university in China. But some of the same things that have occurred in the West have, unbeknownst to myself and many others, occurred in China. So China has its own problems right now with the usual suspects. And there is a growing movement right now in China that we're not hearing much about, but I've got my ear to the ground, so to speak, with my friend over there. So I see that as happening. But then again, Jeff, I have to say that I am not an expert in world current events right now. I'm like anybody else. I watch to the best of my ability, try to understand what's occurring in the Middle East, especially right now. And most of it doesn't make any sense, quite honestly. But I think we can go right back to World War II to find out where most of this actually got its start, a rolling head start, as a matter of fact. And as I mentioned I'm working on a book right now about Japan, a similar book, a parallel book to the book we're talking about right now, Hellstorm. And if we don't learn anything else at all from this book or the next book, we've got to realize that this cannot go on much longer. We cannot incinerate the globe like we're starting to do and expect to survive it. This is...
Our last chance was Germany. We fought the wrong enemy, and Patton knew. People don't know, but Patton kept two or maybe three full German divisions of Waffen-SS fully equipped and ready to go against the Russians. He wanted to roll them all the way back and out of the picture. And he was killed for his views, as you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's no denying the fact that the West has been occupied ever since 1945. This sewage that we live in today, anybody who enjoys this is an idiot, a total idiot. Anybody
McCarthy knew. He knew, and the Roosevelt regime was absolutely penetrated and full of communists. Read Major Jordan's diaries, folks. Major George, Racy George, diary. Major Jordan's diaries. George Racy Jordan's diaries. And if you want to find out what really happened in World War II, read that little book. It's 120 pages. It's his congressional testimony. We were giving all of our above top secret material to the Soviets throughout the war. And American pilots flew it over the polar route. And George Racy Jordan was right there. It's a story. It's fascinating. But look at Harry Hopkins. Look at some of these people that we were infiltrated, folks. Seriously. When you went back to do research on this, I've tried to find, Tom, some real credible and important information on the Weimar Republic. The 20s in Germany, the 30s in Germany. A lot of that has been scrubbed from the internet. There's not that much left. I can't find it if it's there. It's like there have been people who have gone through to eradicate the fact that the Bolshevik communists had penetrated Germany and were taking it down and taking it over. And that was part of the reason that Adolf Hitler had such astonishing loyalty from the people. They knew too.
So it sounds like an internet book burning, so to speak, the ugly details of what was going on in Weimar.
Exactly.
Yes, it sounds like a credible theory to me. I don't doubt it at all. I think we've all heard, though, enough about what was going on there. It sounds so parallel to what's going on in America right now, this utter subjugation of our culture, this filthy sewage that the TV spews out, this so-called humor, so-called culture, so-called art.
The culture of celebrity.
No wonder we're a wild animal chewing on our own vitals right now, trying to stop this pain. And no wonder we have such a plague of sickness, whether it be obesity or anorexia or people... this mania for tattoos. What is this all about? This sounds like they all sound like manifestations of some sort of psychological sickness that
they're
suffering under, and we are suffering under psychological sickness.
Those are external signs of death from within, all of them.
I agree. Yes, this is not a healthy society. That's why we're so unhappy. People have commented upon that, why Americans are so unhappy. Because we're not masters of our own house here. We are occupied. We are a satellite of Israel. We are a colony. We've been that way for a long time. Why else do you think Americans are running off to fight Israel's wars in Iraq, Afghanistan, Somalia, Yemen, Egypt, now Ukraine? That's because we can't stop it. We have no more these clowns that we elect to the U.S. Congress. We Americans might as well elect a group of trained SEALs to go in there. They represent us about as well as a group of trained SEALs would. We have no say. Anyway, that's my soapbox. I'll get off of that.
Please. Fine. For those of you who just joined us, talking to Thomas Goodrich, a brilliant historian, and the book is called Hellstorm, the death of Nazi Germany, 1944 to 1947. But I would say as an addition there, it did go on until 1953.
It's going on even today, Jeff. I mean, you cannot check out AOL or Yahoo without once a week there's a story of a Jewish story about some 95-year-old camp guard that was found hiding somewhere, or somebody. The lampshades and soap, that's pretty much died out, and now it's going to be something new, but it's always being brought up. It's always in front of us. It's become a religion, of course.
And precisely. Of course,
every time they pull something like that, generally expect something around the world bad to happen. Some new crime committed. Gaza, for God's sakes. That was no more. I mean, to call the Gaza genocide a war is like calling a massacre a misunderstanding. This was a slaughter fest. Women and children first, targeting them, for God's sakes.
Yeah.
And then having the audacity. Can you imagine what it would have been like had roles been reversed? Had they targeted Israeli women and children? And oh, my God, man. Well, there I go again. Another soapbox.
Well, it would go down in history. It would now not. It'll just be a footnote. It was the fourth time the Israelis had assaulted Gaza. I thought, honestly, they were going to roll it all down, just flatten it, all of it, and force those people to walk out of there. And I think somebody pulled Netanyahu back and said, you better stop now. They, with Avigdor Lieberman, Netanyahu, psychotics of the worst magnitude, clearly intent on trying to annihilate enough of Gaza to where the people had nothing to return to. And they did a pretty damn good job of it. I'm surprised they stopped. I wouldn't be surprised if they started up again, frankly.
I don't think world opinion matters to these people.
They don't give a good goddamn. They care nothing about world. There's no one going to hold them accountable because they are a creation of the Rothschild banking cartel in the city of London. It is a privately owned country with the world's third or fourth largest thermonuclear weapons arsenal, period. And they've been using thermonuclear blackmail for decades to run the damn world.
Yes, and as long as they've got good old Uncle Sucker to go in like a pit bull and attack whoever they point at, they're going to use us like a proxy every chance they get. Why risk good Jewish boys when you've got so many stupid
bend
cattle?
Over and give us your money and your sons and daughters, and that's the name of the game. Hold on, and we'll be right back. The book is Hellstorm, The Death of Nazi Germany, 1944 to 1947, by Thomas Goodrich. I would urge all of you to read this book. If you read no other book about World War II, read this one so you understand the horror of it. That's been forgotten. Remember, no computers, no television now, not in battlefield situations. Oh, it was in a somewhat minor role in the society. They were just bringing it out. No computers. These were men and machines. It was an astonishing event in history. We'll be right back. Okay, and welcome back. Talking with author Thomas Goodrich, and the book is called Hellstorm. This is a big one. I hope you'll get a copy of it. And I hope after you read it, you'll pass it along to someone else who still cares, still remembers, young, old, it doesn't matter. There are some good people in this country left, lots of them. They've just been led astray, and they have lost their way. They remind me of a compass that has had the needle taken off of it. And it's not going to get easy. It's going to get tougher. When you look at this book, I remember talking to some B-17 crew members. One was a bombardier, one was a pilot. And those men, most of them, Thomas, as you well know, understood exactly what they were doing. They knew they were bombing cities. They knew they were killing people. And they were haunted by that, tormented, terrified by that for the rest of their lives. Some are still alive now. They know what they did. They were lied to, and they were sent over there, and I can't even believe what it must have been to be on the ground. I've talked to people who were 8 to 10 miles away from a bombing run over a city, and they said that the noise was ungodly. 2,000 bombers, four engines. Have you ever seen a B-17 or a B-24 Liberator take off and heard those huge reciprocating engines beating the wind and lifting that plane up? You'll know. Imagine 1,000 of those, and then imagine the bombs falling, the ground shaking. I've talked to people, and they tell stories that are I couldn't come close to relating them. You've heard them.
You know, Jeff, also in the book, I do start off with the air war. It does occur later on in the book, but in the words of the people themselves, what it was like to go through one of these incredible raids, say 1,000 planes like you're talking about. If it was a daytime raid, generally that was U.S. Air Force, 8th right. Air Force. And let's say there are 500 bombers up there, B-17 bombers. And the people on the ground said when the bomb bay doors opened, it was like a flash of sunlight, a huge flash went throughout the entire area. That's how many planes there were up there. That's
from the aluminum. When the aluminum doors spread out, it reflected the sun.
And and when the bombs started falling, not hitting, but when they started falling, the air just seemed to reverberate with the sound of that many tons coming down. And then, of course, when hell was unleashed on Earth, when the bombs actually started going through there, then – you know, if you were outside, generally you were dead pretty quick. But what it was like to go through all of that. You know, you hit something there. You hit a point that I was thinking about while you were saying it. All the folks that came back, and I grew up in that period where the veterans of World War II were everywhere. They were, you know, working everywhere. They were doing things.
Sure.
And there was this old saying about they don't even talk about it. They don't want to talk about it. They don't want to talk about the war. And I automatically assumed back then that, wow, they must have been really rough. The fright,
the personal trauma, losing their buddies and being wounded and all that.
Now, now I think it's different. I think it's the things they did that they don't want to talk about that troubled them.
Right.
So, you know, I was 18 once, and I know what 18s are capable of doing. I was also in the military. And I know from 18 to 25, basically you have no soul, or at least it's not a fully developed soul. You can do all sorts of things and never lose a minute's sleep over it back then at that age. And that's why, of course, young men are marched off to war by these old geezers. But if you're lucky, you survive. You live. And later on, then you start thinking about what you did when you're 30, 35, 40, and you can't sleep at nights.
Yeah.
That's what I think World War II was all about, the people who did these things. Some people came back and joined Hell's Angel motorcycle groups because they just couldn't deal with it. They wore Nazi regalia because maybe they realized they killed people better than themselves. Or they came back and became alcoholics like my father did. Or some committed suicide. I'm sure there were a lot of them that did that, or some like Kurt Vonnegut came back and had to write about it. Slaughterhouse-Five, the incineration of Dresden, and the death of maybe upwards of 400,000, mostly women and children. 400,000.
You know, 400,000 in a matter of two, three days tops.
Yep.
The Dresden story, as written by Vonnegut, thank goodness he wrote that book. Slaughterhouse 13, right?
No, Slaughterhouse 5.
Five. Okay. Stalag 13. Stalag 17? Anyway, okay. Slaughterhouse 5, Kurt Vonnegut Jr., if you want to read. Kurt Vonnegut was a prisoner there in Dresden and survived it, the bombing. This was a calculated genocidal massacre of nearly 500,000 human beings, mostly women and children, all right? This is something that is not talked about today. The Zionist media tries to reduce the number of dead down to 50,000, 60,000, 70,000. Lies, just like the so-called Holocaust of 6 million, which they used after World War I as well. And we know now that the Auschwitz concentration camp and labor camp and manufacturing center has had to change its bronze plaque. First, it was 4 million died there, and then it said approximately 3 million died who passed through these gates. They had to lower it to 2 million, and now it's 1 million or less, approximately 1 million. Well, what's the difference? 3 million. Have they reduced the 6 million figure? Hell no. And as you said, every week practically, the Zionist media in the UK rolls out another evil Nazi story. Just sickening. Same old crap. Same old stuff.
Yeah, the good news is we're aware of that, and the alternative media is just circumventing that, and they can pound all they want on that same old that dead horse that they keep beating. But it's not coming through as loud and clear as it was back in the 50s, 60s, 70s when they had total control over virtually every aspect of communications and media. Right. It's a lot different now, and people just like you, in fact, you're one of the leaders of this whole thing, your program. These are the good old days starting right now. The bad old days are over. Let me say this also. Dresden's always brought up because it's the best known. David Irving wrote a wonderful book about it. We've heard a lot about it. Dresden's made a lot of documentaries. Mm-hmm. But virtually every German city over 50K suffered a similar fate as Dresden. Not as many people died, it's true, but tens of thousands of people were swept away in the firestorms of Hamburg and Berlin and Darmstadt and Dusseldorf and on and on and on. Virtually every German city received the fate of Dresden. Dresden's just the most popular.
Schweinfurt, another huge
Schweinfurt,
one.
Yes.
And you know what else? The great vaunted American war machine did the same thing to Tokyo with incendiary bombs. In fact, B-29 pilots said that they could feel the heat. They were flying low to drop more. They could feel the heat of the burning homes in Tokyo as they drove their big bombers down lower and lower and then dropped these enormous cans of incendiary fuel to build the firestorm. They could feel the heat. Just amazing. We're pretty good at killing, aren't we, Tom?
We've become experts at it, unfortunately, and I fear that we're going to continue until...
Let's hold until after the break here. We'll think about it. We'll take a break. Talking to the esteemed author Thomas Goodrich, and the book is called Hellstorm. This is a monumental contribution to true history. We continue. Thomas Goodrich is our guest. The book is Hellstorm, and it was 1944 and 1947 in Germany. Okay, Tom, until what? Until we learn what? What are we going to learn to stop this extraordinary and ever-advancing technological skill we have to kill more people? Now, you can take it from electromagnetic weapons, which we have, laser weapons to bioweapons, designer bioweapons. We have stuff on the shelf now that would curl the hair of most people. We don't hear about it. You have a good idea. I have a good idea. And it's way down the road from where we're told. So until what? Until we're all wiped out and come back and try it again?
Well, I think we're doing our damned level best right now to bite the big one as we keep poking Russia. I don't know what in the hell is behind all of this except insanity. We're dealing with a nation that can destroy us 100 times over. Now, I guarantee you, if we ever get into a thermonuclear war with Russia, the word war in this rubble, this radioactive rubble we call America, war will not be whispered for the next 100 years.
I agree.
That's how devastating this defeat will be. But if we do not get that far, and for God's sakes, we have to pray we don't. Even if you don't believe in a higher being, please pray that we don't. One way we can avoid that is stop the silence about war. Don't, for instance, this World War II, the book Hellstorm, had the world known about this thing, had this enormous crimes. I call it the darkest and best kept secret in world history. The crimes that were committed against Germany from 1944 to 47. were guaranteed to repeat this because nobody knew about it. Nobody's known about it
Correct.
For 70-some years.
Yeah.
And why am I the first book to actually come out and tell the entire story? If we do not learn from there's no word to describe it. Hellstorm is the only word I found that comes close to describing what this monstrous, horrible crime committed against Germany was. Hellstorm. If we don't learn from it, if we don't read about it, how in the hell are we ever going to stop committing these type of crimes? So I think a crime almost equally as bad as the crime committed against Germany was the silence, the crime of silence that continues to this very day.
I agree.
Thank goodness we're talking about it, you and I. We're talking about a book, but let's face it, the world has no clue right now. This book is not it's not out there yet. So as long as we believe that the Allied version of World War II, that it was a great fest where the greatest generation fought the good war and destroyed evil.
No.
And as long as we keep believing that, we're doomed to keep repeating these wars. We're built on war right now. Let's face it. The Americans love war because they're easy. We go over and beat up on a little Stone Age rock pile called Afghanistan or Sandistan. And it's easy. Very few casualties. We feel like we can beat our chests. We've destroyed this nation. That makes us feel good. Well, someday, like I'm saying, if we ever get into something big with somebody mm-hmm. who can handle themselves.
And the other go ahead.
Yes, go ahead. We'll regret it, I promise you.
Yeah, two things. One, the other great secret is what we've done to a generation of our young people. We've been fighting in Afghanistan for 13 years now. These young people will never be the same inside or outside. Many of them are on 10, 15, 20 medications. Their lives are destroyed. These are casualties of war. We have lost enormous numbers of young people. We have killed between 2 and 3 million people in Iraq, another 2+ million in Afghanistan. No one knows for sure. This is a true Holocaust. The second thing is what you touched upon with Russia. Putin has played the Ukraine card virtually perfectly. Poroshenko continues to talk about Mariupol will be a part of Ukraine. He seems to be saying one thing to Putin, but back home he says something quite different. This is a bankster, Zionist, takeover of Ukraine. The regime that has been installed is illegal. It is essentially beholden directly to the International Monetary Fund, the World Bank, and the other tentacles of the City of London, which are running this. They want the natural resources of Ukraine. They want the wealth. This is just another wealth acquisition. But it didn't work. Now, certainly Russia was contributing to the resistance in the East, and thank God for that. Somebody's got to stand up to this sooner or later. And I don't know what's going to happen, but they're continuing to stick the bear, hit the bear, bait the bear, tease and torment the bear. And if the bear decides that's it, it's over. It's over for all of us. All of us. They have, do you know people that they have shelters all around Moscow, out in the outskirts, that can literally accommodate the entire population of that city? How many shelters do we have in this country that can take care of the people in any city? Do we have one city where they have underground shelters that can take care of the population of that city? No. But the Russians do. They've never stopped preparing to survive a nuclear war. We don't have a civil defense program anymore. We have nothing because the controllers, the powers in this country, don't care one whit about you or I or anybody else. Only thing they worry about is their money and their hole in the ground they think they're going to go into and climb back out when things are calmed down if it gets to a war. And it's all very discouraging. I really salute the people in the east of Ukraine who have stood up to this. They, in the last 3 weeks, they have turned this thing around 180 degrees. Kiev's mercenary army has been defeated. It is in retreat. There are battalion retreats everywhere, I'm told. I read about this. And it's been quite a turnaround. Porky continues to talk about recovering Crimea. I mean, the guy is nuts. These people are crazy. Russians are not going to allow that to happen. Anyway, go ahead, Tom. You're the guest.
I love to hear you talk about stuff like that. I follow that probably as well as anyone. I think for a change, these mercenary cutthroats that the U.S. and Israel have been throwing at every little rock pile in the Middle East, suddenly they find white men with guns in their hands defending their homes, and it's not such a walkover as it is in Syria and Afghanistan and Iraq and places like that. That's heartening, by the way. Every defeat this monstrosity faces, I think it's another step toward freedom for the rest of us as soon as they finally get their clock cleaned. Now, I'm not hoping for the big one, as I mentioned earlier with Russia.
Of course not. Sure.
No. But you know something also, Jeff, that's just when we were kids, we used to think, well, the grown-ups are in charge of everything. Things will be fine. I mean, I'm not going to worry because look at all these adults. My dad's smart, and so that means the president must be even smarter. Since I've gained my majority, I've changed my attitude on that quite a bit. We've got a bunch of idiots running the show. We've got people that are desperate, that are savage, that really don't calculate the consequences of their acts anymore.
No,
maybe
they
never did. Maybe they never did as a kid, but it seemed better when I was a child. Now, at times, we're hanging by a thread. That thing about that's been publicized quite a bit between Kennedy and Khrushchev and the Cuban Missile Crisis, that should scare the hell out of anybody.
It should.
How close we were.
Yeah.
Just thank God we had Kennedy, and thank God they had Khrushchev, because the idiots we've got today – well, let me say this also. Thank God for Putin. I think he's the only voice of reason in a totally irrational, insane world. I believe when he stepped in and stopped – basically cast his shadow over Syria, and back when the sarin gas thing was out and the Israel false intel, I think the U.S. was on the verge of attacking air
attacks. I think you're right. I only wish he had done it before Iraq was decimated. They were there. They weren't ready for some reason. They didn't do it, but they could have. It was possible. I don't know all the ins and outs, but you raise good points. Very good points.
Well, thank God for Putin, because
amen.
we don't need some erratic crazy person there.
Well, you said something earlier also. When we were kids, there was something called accountability. If we screwed up, we were held accountable by our teachers, by our parents. No more. Teachers are scared to death of being sued. They don't control the classrooms anymore. The parents often don't control the children or the household anymore. They want to be their kids' best friends. They want to be cool. It's all really been done through the media. This is a very carefully constructed operation, a psychological operation that has been astonishingly successful. And when you sit in a theater, if you go to a trash movie, a popular trash movie, a comedy, let's say, there was one called This Is the End, and you watch the audience laugh at the most unfunny things you can imagine, you just walk out of there shaking your head. Who are these people? Anyway.
Well, you know, I mentioned that I'm doing a parallel book to Hellstorm about Japan and the atrocities committed against the Japanese and the Japanese nation. And sometimes I wonder if I was a Japanese American sitting in an American movie theater in the 1940s, and it just happened to be the Fighting Seabees or a Back to Bataan or some rah-rah war movie.
Yeah, John Wayne, yeah.
Yeah, I can't imagine what I must have felt like as a Japanese American when the Americans are applauding and shouting when a Sherman tank runs over and over again at a dead Japanese shoots them out of a tree. You know,
right.
I can just hear the applause and the laughter. You know, that's the powerful price of propaganda in both of these wars, the Europe and Japanese war. So, yes, what you're saying, I think there's two worlds, and I'm living in one of them. It's not the world that you're talking about, the ones in the movie theater.
Right. By the way, the Cuban Missile Crisis was averted by three Soviet submarine captains. They had on one of them, at least, one of the subs, a nuclear-tipped torpedo, and they were going to take out the American aircraft carrier there with it. And they could not reach Moscow, and so they had to vote, and majority would carry the decision. Two of them voted to fire, and, well, I mean, it had to be unanimous. Let me back up. Two voted to launch the torpedo, and the third captain said no. And he thwarted that. It wasn't majority. It had to be a complete three vote for or three vote against. That was the difference. Because if that nuclear torpedo had been fired and it would have vaporized the carrier, that would have been the beginning of the nuclear war. And it was, that's a true story. And it's fascinating. But that one sub captain, kept it. He was the one who stopped it.
That's incredible. I had not heard that story before.
It's there.
It sounds plausible. It sounds believable.
Yep. Tom, listen, I really appreciate you. Thank you so much for doing the book and for being here tonight. And I hope the book does well. If there's anything I can do for you, I'm going to put it up on my book carousel, of course, and we'll get that done. But use my name, whatever, if I can be of any help at all.
Well, thanks so much for having me, Jeff. And you're a class act. I really love you.
Thank you. Thank you, Tom. I appreciate it. You be well.
You too.
Okay. Good night.
Night.
The book is Hellstorm. It's an extraordinary book. Thomas Goodrich. All right. We'll be back.